This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 15 was recorded on June 10th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. Forest for the Trees founder Luke Grohman is back. Luke, what's got your attention this week?
Hi, Eric. Thanks again for having me on. A couple things that have really grabbed my attention recently have been really the one that is something that we first highlighted at Macro Voices Live, actually, last August in Toronto. And last August in our presentation at Macro Voices Live, we noted that in the first half of 2018, China had run its first current account deficit in 20 plus years. And then we showed a decision tree that China faced that offered China really four choices. Choice number one to get out of this current account deficit position was to slow down China's economy in order to reduce commodity imports and therefore cut the current account deficit. Option number two was sell Chinese FX reserves to fund the current account deficit. Option number three was to devalue the yuan versus the dollar. And option number four, the one that virtually no one was talking about at the time, was accelerate the pricing and settlement of Chinese commodity imports in yuan. And, at the time we ran through a decision tree where, we said, look, if you slow down China's economy in order to reduce commodity imports, you're going to have slower economic growth. It's negative for Chinese political stability and global economic growth. That would be bad for, in all likelihood, for the yuan, for EM risk assets, for commodities, for risk assets more broadly, and likely positive for the dollar and short-term treasuries. And the ultimate outcome we said to that decision would be that China would likely see domestic political disruption, global economic disruption, and ends that decision tree or that branch with being more beholden to the U.S. and the dollar. So then we go to the second option, which was sell Chinese FX reserves to fund the current account deficit. And this is something we obviously saw in 2015, which in the near term, it buys time, but markets might see through it and begin discounting it with a weaker yuan. And that could create capital outflow problems, disruption, and negative for a lot of the same areas that we just talked about, and positive for dollar and probably short-term treasuries. And so, again, the outcome there is China would likely see domestic political disruption, global economic disruption, and end that episode more beholden to the U.S. and to the dollar. And the third one, of course, was devalue the yuan versus the dollar. Here, too, capital outflows, higher Chinese inflation, political disruption, same series of negatives versus positives, and China ends more beholden to the U.S. And to the dollar. And then the fourth, which was accelerate the pricing and settlement of Chinese commodity imports in yuan, which people were not thinking had a big chance of happening, but that would possibly be negative near term for risk assets, commodities in yuan, but ultimately China would see some political disruption domestically and possibly global economic disruption, but they would end that less beholden to the U.S. and to the dollar. And so back in August in Toronto, we concluded by saying that these implications ultimately meant that China's decision tree was no longer avoid instability or don't avoid instability, but rather that do you want to remain beholden to the U.S. or not? Because instability appears to be in the cake at this point. And so our conclusion then was that if China wished to no longer be beholden to the U.S., China would need to accelerate yuan commodity pricing. And it now appears China's doing exactly this in response to the escalating trade war. And so, we touched on this briefly with you back on the May 13th Macro Voices All-Star interview with Oil at 62, where we said, look, China could, if they wanted to, shift more oil imports to yuan. That would shift the key swing factor in oil pricing to the yuan dollar cross rate, and that of course is falling. So as yuan falls, oil will fall. So now all of a sudden, if yuan falls chaotically, oil prices could plummet. We'll go right back to the late 14th, early 15 time frame. And so you fast forward 2 weeks, and this headline hit the South China Morning Post: China to open up access to yuan commodity futures contract beyond oil as trade war accelerates. And it notes that they'll be launching rubber and non-ferrous metals contracts open to foreigners, and that the yuan oil contract has done better than expected. So more broadly, we continue to find the implications of a shift to yuan oil and commodities to both China and the U.S. remains pretty poorly understood by a lot of investors.
I couldn't agree more, Luke. You know, it's something that everybody thought you were crazy when you were emphasizing the importance of this oil contract. Everybody said it's never going to see any serious volume. And sure enough, it did. So certainly those other implications that you're talking about are important. So what are they, and why do you think that they're poorly understood?
I think they're poorly understood, Eric, because most analysts are still analyzing what's happening based solely on the dollar-centric currency system that's prevailed from 1971 until 2014, you know, rather than on the balance of payments-centric system that existed for most of history prior to 1971, and which ultimately China's actions are pushing the currency system back towards. And so, you know, the implications themselves are that as China prices more of its commodity imports in its own currency, its dollar commodity import costs will fall, which effectively creates dollars out of thin air for China and gives China control of its own current account for the first time ever. And this is important because last year, China's non-commodity goods trade surplus was around $700 billion per the IIF, with a significant percentage of this in oil. And so when you boil this down to plain English, what it means is that as China buys more of its commodities in its own currency, China's current account surplus will rise and China's dollar shortage will be reduced. And it'll become much harder for China to have a yuan currency crisis, as the well-advertised yuan bear case of a commodity-driven dollar shortfall steadily gets taken off the table. And that's why I thought this headline in the South China Morning Post about expanding the yuan commodity contracts for international investors beyond just oil was so important, is that, you know, China's saying they'll accelerate and expand the yuan commodity trade from beyond just oil. And remember, the yuan oil contract, like you said, it was supposed to be dead on arrival, but here we are 15 months on, and it has a, you know, 13-14% front month share. You know, the second and third month volumes are starting to rise pretty steadily as well.
Okay, so are there other implications to this, particularly for the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great question. And this, too, is really not well understood, I'm finding, which is that, you know, this is not about the yuan replacing the dollar as global reserve currency as the dollar's been structured from 1971 to 2014. Even if China could do this, they don't want to, because they'd have to offshore their entire productive economy, or at least a quorum of their productive economy, to run the needed deficits. And there's just no political appetite for that in China. You know, rather, the implications for the U.S., you know, or as a result, the implications for the U.S. are much more subtle. And those are that, you know, as China de-dollarizes its commodity trade, and you know, additionally, as the EU possibly de-dollarizes its energy trade via Iranian oil imports and Nord Stream 2 pipeline gas purchases from Russia, then the world needs to hold secularly fewer dollar reserves, which means the U.S. needs to fund more of its own deficits. And we've talked about this a number of times. You know, the U.S. having to fund more of its own deficits via the U.S. private sector initially drives a dollar short squeeze globally as the U.S. crowds out the global private sector. And that's something we saw begin in spades in 3Q14. More recently, as we noted here on Macro Voices All-Stars 2 weeks ago, this crowding out of the global dollar system has now reached our own shores, with U.S. government deficits increasingly crowding out the U.S. banking system, with Fed funds persisting above interest on excess reserves for nearly 3 months now. And this then informs the ultimate implication for the U.S., which is as multi-currency energy accelerates as a result of U.S. sanctions and trade tensions, the date at which the U.S. Fed is going to have to cut rates and then renew QE effectively to fund the U.S. government gets pulled forward at an accelerating pace. And so as we noted 2 weeks ago, U.S. money markets are suggesting the Fed's going to have to inject significant dollar liquidity soon. And so ultimately, like we said, if the Fed is likely going to have to inject that liquidity into a decent economy. And in the background, a key reason for this is that the multi-currency energy and commodity pricing system that we began discussing 5 years ago is really starting to reach a critical mass on two fronts. Number one, on China and EU accelerating their efforts. And then number two, as U.S. deficits are structurally rising. And so ultimately, the implications of multi-energy currency pricing is initially dollar positive, risk asset negative, but beyond a tipping point, dollar negative and risk asset positive, as the U.S. is forced to finance its own deficits, first with the global private sector, then internally with the domestic private sector, and then, unless it significantly cuts defense entitlements or interest expense, then, you know, via the Fed. The Fed's going to be forced to finance U.S. deficits. And we're nearing that moment rapidly, we think. And as we noted a couple weeks ago, we think markets may be beginning to sniff this out.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Luke, because I am seeing some things changing as well as what people are saying changing. So just to refresh our listeners' memory, you have an extremely strong long-term dollar bearish view, But in recent months, you've been tactically bullish, or at least long the dollar. Has that changed? Are you still tactically long? And the other thing I'd like you to comment on is we're getting some notable names like Jeff Gundlach just this weekend tweeting, okay, the dollar's rolling over because Jeff Gundlach says so. Do you think that we're at an inflection point where the dollar has peaked and is about to roll over, as some people are saying? And how does it affect all of your other positioning relative to what we've discussed the last few times that we've talked?
Sure. Yeah, I think the last time we were on, I think the interview title was, you know, the dollar may be topping here. And we kind of talked through some of those issues. And I thought that was a very fair way of putting kind of where we were positioning. And, you know, we are much more cautious on the dollar at this point. We remain bullish on risk assets, you know, slanted towards EM and value versus growth, as well as on gold, on Bitcoin. But yeah, we're much more cautious on the dollar. We're cognizant that if the Fed does not supply this dollar liquidity as needed, that's going to be the wrong call. But ultimately, we're very confident that at this point, the Fed doesn't really have a choice. They can sort of play hard to get, if you will, but ultimately, they are going to have to provide that liquidity. And when they do, you know, it's not going to be good for the dollar. And so I think we are, if we're not at a critical tipping point, we're a stone's throw from that critical tipping point in terms of where these multi-currency energy dynamics and the de-dollarization of global commodity markets go from being dollar positive via short squeeze to dollar negative because the Fed has to get more involved with financing the U.S. government.
Okay, Luke, so you've got a pretty clear view then that the dollar is probably turning down here. What's the biggest risk to that position?
Yeah, so I mean, near term, the risk to that position is that the Fed decides that they need more political cover before they begin to effectively finance the U.S. government. And by that, I mean, if you know the markets are forecasting, I think, a cut for July and a couple cuts for in the second half of the year, if those are not done as the market is forecasting, then I think you can get a 4Q18 type scenario pretty quickly where you're going to get risk off, dollar up, you know, yields down, gold up, you know, pretty quickly. But intermediate term, I just don't think there's a lot of risk to my position, because if the Fed does hold off on rate cuts or dollar injections of liquidity, that's only going to accelerate the both timing and magnitude of the dollar injection the Fed will ultimately be forced to supply either later this year or early next year.
Luke, it's really great to have you on the show, and I look forward to another update in a couple of weeks. But before I let you go, please tell our listeners where they can follow your work, what's your Twitter handle, and what can people expect to find at fftt-llc.com?
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Our Twitter handle is at Luke Groman, LukeGromen, all one word. It's a pretty active feed. You can find us there. At the website, you can check out there. There's a number of different tabs. If you enjoy these updates, we're getting great feedback on our weekly report that we call Tree Rings, which is 7 to 10 pages of 10 most interesting things we've seen each week, a couple of charts and brief synopses on key developments as we see them each week. And so you can go to the website, fftt-llc.com, and look under the Tree Rings under the subscribe tab if you're interested in more information about that.
Fantastic. We'll look forward to getting you back on the program in a couple of weeks. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.